Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program to address the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's voices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It is made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. Fred Monroe is hosting the program virtually today while still practicing recommendations for physical distancing. His guests will be joining today's show by phone. Fred and his guests will be discussing these topics today on today's show. We encourage you to participate by sending us your questions for today's guests by email to voices@kcbx.org, or you can call them into us at 805-549-8855. I'll turn it over to you, Fred.
Great. Thank you. Glad to be with you today. This is the first opportunity we have had to really talk about something that is key to both KCBX and my own heart, and that is the fact that a tremendous amount of what's going on with COVID has affected the arts, the cultural events, and music. The pandemic has affected the entire world. It's impacted the lives of everyone, but we sometimes forget the fact that there are over 5 million Americans who make their livelihood by the arts. That means musicians, artists in residence, artists with their own studios, artists who are viewed through galleries and other environments like that. And this also includes other types of performing arts besides music, poetry, reading, storytelling, and things like that. And this has really come to literally a screeching halt in a lot of ways. The cancellation of gigs, concerts, openings, showings, engagements, really to quell the virus, is wreaking havoc on the art history community and the livelihood of a lot of these people. My guests today are Neil Breton. He is the board president for San Luis Obispo Arts. Todd Newman, who is with Good Medicine Presents, and Steve Larian, who is the director of Cal Poly Arts. We're going to discuss today really how the arts in the community have been seriously affected by COVID virus, and looking at whether or not there are some ways to circumvent some of the problems we're having to being able to present art in any kind of way, shape, or form. And this is going to be a discussion that's very important, because at this point, we don't know where the end of this process is and the beginning of being able to rebuild a community around these things. I want to start off with, and I generally don't quote my guests, but since I got a note from when we got our information, I got one of the things that Neil said in the information he sent us to in advance was, arts tell the story of history anthropologically and socially. We are the only creatures that create something to inform an intellectual need among us. I think, Neil, I have to say that is probably the best cap on why the arts are so incredibly critical that I've ever read. And I thank you for sending that to me, which I believe you actually presented as kind of an off-the-cuff comment when we were looking at some background information about this. So based upon that, can you please elaborate a little bit more on, as a visual artist, how that affects what's going on in the community and how that affects your members at the Cal Poly, Slow Arts?
Well, I think, thanks for having me on, by the way. This is a real
glad fun. You're here.
What has been, I think, the most telling about what's been going on as far as the pandemic goes, is the resilience of artists that usually would probably do, no matter what, they're going to be in a place where they're going to be creating. And even though it becomes like something that's really difficult to do as far as like finding a reason to do it, I think that if we just continue to do it and knowing that it kind of brings hope is kind of like a big thing. But for the most part, when we're talking about like what we do for the council, we've had to shift in what we would normally do, which is like outside space stuff, or at least we would be doing things in cafes and we would be doing things at the museum, say, or we would be doing things where there are contained spaces. So what we've had to figure out how to do is to kind of promote each other, kind of link arms and kind of push through this together and support each other and support a community online, doing a lot of different things online. Basically, we've done like a virtual Art After Dark. Normally Art After Dark would be, you get a map, you kind of walk around to some different venues and you get to see art, you get to talk to an artist. Maybe you have a cup of coffee from Linnea's or somewhere. So you're supporting a local business, you're supporting an artist, you're supporting the community as a whole by participating in this. So it's kind of been a really, it was an obvious sort of shift for us. And I can't necessarily say that, you know, like visual art is kind of a struggle anyway. So I'm sure that it's probably the same. I mean, it's probably worse, definitely for the performing arts. And Steve, you could probably speak to that. And it's probably not great for, I know it's not great for my musician friends. So I'm sure Todd, you could chime in on that as well.
Yeah. Todd, if I can start with you on that regard, because what you do and how you do it, I think for a lot of people is not very visible in the community. I can tell you if I go to one of the venues that has live music, how it got there and how it was put together, and not to detract from Steve and Cal Poly Arts, and we'll talk about in a little bit, it's the amount of production that goes to some group coming to Cal Poly Arts for the public. Like is kind of visible, the building, the environment. What you do brings art to people that is that's very flexible. I mean, I've been to programs that you've done at bars and taverns. I've been to other things that have been outside and in a rather larger venue. And for what a lot of our audience may not know. You know, Good Medicine Presents also is an instrumental part of booking music and putting on the artists for the Live Oak Music Festival every year. So you've come to a screeching halt. But I believe since what you do is not that visible to a lot of people, that's a screeching halt that no one's noticed.
I appreciate that. You know, this whole pandemic has been a very fluid situation for starting out early March, we definitely started to see information coming our way that it was a concern. And, you know, starting at the mid-March level where everything really got shut down. But from that standpoint, and what Good Medicine does is, since we started in late 2014, my wife and I previously were owners of Slow Brew, and so we had put music on at Slow Brew. We did some music at other locations, but that was 90% of what we did. As we moved out into the community, it gave us an opportunity to work at a different level with agents and artists and try to, you know, find different opportunities, as you'd mentioned, indoor settings, outdoor settings. So as far as the kind of the behind the scenes, that really really made us maybe even a bit more visible in the industry for various opportunities. When March came around, it was, maybe I'm a little bit fatalistic when I evaluate these types of things, because I think this industry in general imparts a fair bit of trepidation, but it really just, everything just stopped. And early on, there was a sense of, you know, we'll get through it. There was definitely, I think, from both artists and agents and managers, a bit of a dichotomy on how they felt about things. We went to a point where I would say some of that dichotomy even seemed to fall upon political lines and how people felt about the world in general, their community in general, their politics in general. And so again, everything in California seemed to shut down where other places weren't quite so shut down. Now, trying to evaluate that and navigate musicians and communicate with musicians and try to get really a lay of the landscape, I think the best way to put it is it's simply fluid. I think, kind of starting out in March, everything seemed like it was going to shut down and get back on track. There were a lot of shows that were rescheduled, shows in March that were even rescheduled as early as late April and things of that nature, to everything being shut down, to other states opening up. So there was, again, momentum thinking, okay, well, we're going to get back on track, to once again hitting it to a complete shutdown. So from our perspective, it's been really, really difficult to, I guess, kind of have a concise understanding of what we can do to get things back on track and what that timeline or that event horizon is going to look like. And at this particular moment in time, and again, not to sound fatalistic, it just seems remarkably unknown.
Yeah. I think one of the questions that that comes up for the community a lot is, as some people try and do more things outdoors, gee, why can't we just find a way to still do art in the park, still do, concerts in the park through the summer. I think that the people who are dealing with the medical questions are looking at ways to keep us all safe. The arts community is looking at some ways to not have this end or abruptly get canceled for a long time. I know it was when I ask you folks for information before the program, one of the things we ask about is the kind of questions that you get from your community. And one of the questions from Steve, and we'll jump in with this, is, gee, why don't we just do everything for the pack outside? Because if we can spread it out on a park someplace, isn't it just hunky-dory? And Steve, that probably wasn't the best place to start the discussion for you, but it's one of the questions that you've had.
Sure. Well, thanks for inviting me, Fred. It's good to see you in at least on the screen. We get that question a lot, and interestingly, I'll backtrack slightly here. We've done a couple of surveys to ask what people suggestions on how we ought to stay connected to the community and what can we do to meet people's needs. And it comes up when you ask people for recommendations, there are a lot of, why don't you just move everything outdoors? That's why I brought that up. So, there are, to begin with, from a practical standpoint, there are many things that we do that have production values that we couldn't, you're not gonna do a Broadway show in the middle of Mitchell Park, right? So big dance things, and obviously you have a lot of restrictions regarding sound if you're in neighborhood parks or in parking lots and where there are houses around. So it's hard to have a big rock and roll concert. The people who see concerts at Avila, for example, you get complaints from people who are miles away who can hear it. And there are a lot of issues around outside performance that would have to be addressed to be able to do a substantial number of things. Now, that doesn't mean we're not exploring possibilities for that. And one of the things that we're looking into is the possibility of car shows, in other words, like a drive-in movie thing, right? So a number of arts organizations are looking at places to be able to do that. We've actually tried to approach the folks who have the drive-in here, but they want to stick to their programming, their usual programming. So we've looked for other venues that might work. And this has been done by a number of our colleagues around the state here, where you have just people in a big parking lot pull up a little, kind of a closed circuit FM channel that you can tune into and listen to the music without opening the windows on your car, and everybody's safe, and it's kind of a fun, cool experience. And the response from people has been really great, but outdoors is going to be a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that I think has come into play for a lot of people is, as I've talked to other people in the arts and just people I know, is that everybody started looking at this from a standpoint of, okay, in February, we were saying, well, let's just move stuff to March, or let's just move stuff to June. We moved an artist for our house concert that was supposed to be in April. We ended up moving them to June, and then we moved them to September. And then it was a matter of, it's just got to go away.
Yeah. I've had, well, when when we started canceling shows, just like, you know, everybody in February, we canceled or moved 14 shows from March to September to March to June. Four of them we were able to reschedule into the to an upcoming season. 10 of them we had to just cancel, and in subsequently we had already put together all of our 2020-21 season. We've already taken all of the shows that were in the fall and moved them to starting no earlier than January, or some of those we had to cancel as well. So it's like a, you know, you're just rolling forward as the months go by. And I don't know about you guys, but it seems to me that the months are rolling by a lot faster. It's really kind of hard to believe that we're almost at the end of July. It was just the 4th of July, like yesterday. So I don't know. It's, you know.
Yeah, I was looking at some things that were on my calendar for late September that seemed like they were a half a year away, but they're not anymore.
No,
they're not. Neil, I think that Steve brings up some interesting points, and one of the things that comes to mind when I think about both the visual arts and what you with slow arts do beyond that too, is that there's a tremendous number of people that that kind of say, oh, well, the arts are just a luxury that's inconvenient at the moment. But the flip side for people like me, and speaking for myself, I would say if I were to try and function without the arts, take the stuff off my walls, turn off the music that's running in my house all the time, not be able to go to a Good Medicine concert, not be able to go to Live Oak, not be able to go to Cal Poly Arts, it would be a major part of my life. But I suspect from what may be happening for a lot of people, is they're so wrapped up in their fear around this disease that they're not even noticing that we're gone. And I'm wondering if you see that happening a lot with the visual arts.
I may be operating in like a tunnel, but the minute that this kind of thing hit and we were all under quarantine, I was going online to support my friends, maybe $50 to $100 at a time, like finding little pieces of art to donate to, or giving somebody's some money to Bandcamp, like some of my musician friends. And like, I know that I wasn't alone in doing that kind of endeavor. What really stinks is, I think one of the biggest things is California, just California alone, like arts and culture contributes about almost $200 billion to the economy. So knowing that, like, we're about $185 billion in, like, for people to say, well, this isn't an essential thing, kind of really gets me on a couple of different levels. Like, one, I can understand, like, maybe possibly on an intellectual level, like, trying to take care of our own is probably what's key here. But also, like I said before, you kind of need some hope. You need to listen to music. You can't just sit there and watch Netflix for the rest of your life. You kind of need something to look up at. And during this time, I'm hoping that people, you know, anybody within earshot is hopefully supporting somehow, even if you're just giving a straight up donation to somebody, you know, not getting anything out of it. That would be great. You know, on an artistic level, or at least, you know, as far as the Arts Council goes, like, we're doing our best to try to, like, help as many people as possible. Anytime we saw something that was, like, a grant, even if it was, like, a privately funded grant or whatever, we decided, let's put that in our newsletter and let's put that online and at least try to, like, give resources to people who are probably in need, especially our artistic, the arts and cultural side. So at least we tried as much as possible to help those people. But I'm hoping that the people who have bought a painting before will buy a painting now, or who have gone to a show before will give money to somebody's Bandcamp or buy a CD or a record or something.
I think it's important to remind people of that, and I thank you very much for that focus. I want to, before I get away from this too much, because I get in trouble sometimes for forgetting this, I want to remind folks that because we're doing this under a COVID environment and sheltering, we cannot take your calls as direct calls, but you are welcome to call the station at 805-549-8855. And your message will be relayed to us as far as what your concerns or questions are. You can also email us at voices@kcbx.org, and we're monitoring the email so we can put those things on also. I also want to remind our listeners that there's been a discussion that has come up about the fact that we're dealing with really two separate kinds of environments. And Neil brings up the artists themselves side of this, which is very important. And Steve and Todd really are in the production and producing and providing venue type part of this. This is not the end of the discussion. We're really looking at, in the next 2 to 4 weeks, doing another program where we can bring on some musicians and artists about what they're struggling with. And which brings me to my next point, because it's really kind of focused for Todd and Steve, is the fact that I'm wondering if you're talking to musicians that you would like to book, or musicians or programs you'd like to book for next spring or next summer, when we hopefully will be back to something resembling normal, whatever the new normal is. But your concern is whether or not those production companies, artists, bands will still be functioning, because they've basically gone broke over the last year. Has that come up in the discussion, Todd?
It has. Interestingly enough, I referenced that some of the motivation to get back in doing concerts when things were escalating with the pandemic fell upon kind of political beliefs. But we had a lot of artists that wanted to push through from the very beginning. Again, it's a remarkably fluid situation that's transpired over the last 4 months, even from what I felt in past experiences, and having a real good foundation of where things are going, this one continues to kind of move the ball around. But artists need to work. As an example, and I think something that often falls kind of behind the scenes, is Good Medicine. We have some, I guess what you might call bigger events, but we do a lot of what you consider smaller boutique events, events where, you know, anywhere from 100 to 150 people come to a concert, and those bands are not receiving a big paycheck to be here. Oftentimes those bands are traveling from somewhere else throughout the United States. And so they're motivated because they do receive financial compensation for putting on a concert, but they're trying to share their art. They're trying to develop a fan base. They want to get their music out and get their art out there so that they can share their art, but also so that they can benefit economically from that. One thing that's transpired during this pandemic, again, is several of the concerts that got canceled got rescheduled. I would suggest that even at a certain level, the more boutique artists or artists that didn't have such a large following were even more motivated to keep things going. Since then, I would say we've probably had a dozen artists that we rescheduled their shows, worked very hard to get them to continue to build the market, to introduce to the market, and now they've gotten back to us and said, well, we need to stop rescheduling, and in fact, we need to not really look at 2021 right now, because we're going to have to rebuild our capital resources in our local geographic area, getting the band out to California, paying for the hotel rooms. Maybe they have a bus that they have to finance, managers. They no longer have the resources to do that. And so they've definitely taken a few steps backwards on getting, on their livelihood, but also being able to share their art.
Yeah, good points. Steve, I'm sure you're dealing with organizations that may have to have resources behind them that are gigantic compared to what even a good, well-known traveling band needs. Sure. And is that coming up as a topic that you have to wonder whether or not an artist that you're booking for late 21 may not be able to even tour anymore? They may have stopped touring, regardless of what they're doing, whether it becomes a Broadway production and a trunk show. But that's got to be a worry that you have.
Yeah, of course. I actually am in the process of, we have right now, we've kind of compressed. Normally we do roughly 40-ish shows in a season at the Performing Arts Center and at the Spanos and a few at the Fremont Theater. Right now we're down to, I think, 28 that are currently scheduled into January to May of this coming year. But I just sent a message out to all the agents for all of those artists, companies. You know, I mean, we're talking about dance companies that are traveling, you know, with 15, 20 dancers from the East Coast to come out to the West Coast and do two performances and turn around and go back for not gigantic fees. So is it practical for them to do that, take the risk, all that stuff to come out here in the spring? I think a lot of them are going to say no. Big Broadway tours are predicated on, especially when it gets down to our size of tour stops, you know, where it's one or two shows. I mean, they have to have, to be financially viable, they have to have at least five or six shows in a week to make it even doable. And if they're on a tour, let's say, of the West Coast, and they lose, you know, two or three shows in a week, that's going to kill the whole tour. They're going to have to cancel the whole tour. So that is a big concern and something we have to constantly be monitoring, because those obviously are really expensive endeavors for them and for us. You know, some of the, I mean, we also present a fair number of international artists, and, you know, that has its own set of issues right now that many don't want to come to the United States. Before it was that they weren't allowed to come to the United States. And so we have to keep all of those things in mind as well. So that it's constantly, every day is a new new adventure, as Todd said.
Yeah. And have you, Steve, have you found some artists that you had, well, I don't know how far in advance you book, but my hunch is there's things that you're looking at that are two or three years out in a good year. In other words, when I get my program in the mail for your season, which I get in like about the late May, early June, right. Maybe July. My hunch is that even though you've got that planned now 6 to 9 months in advance, that that's really more like 24 to 36 months in advance to get that far.
Yeah, maybe not 36, but definitely we are working on the 21-22 season, which happens to be the, you know, the 25th anniversary of the Performing Arts Center too. So, you know, they're the folks who run the venue and the Foundation for the Performing Arts Center are anxious for us to, you know, book, you know, Paul McCartney and Yo-Yo Ma. So we'll work on those and see how that goes.
are those regularly at the top of your list?
Right at the top, Paul McCartney
and Yo-Yo Ma. Okay.
Yeah. Together, actually doing a duo. That probably would be a pretty cool set, actually.
I'll settle for John Batiste, who I'd never seen live before I saw him at the PAC, and I'd gladly go back and see live again every time you can get him.
He is somebody that we have taken a great love of, and he loves playing here, so you will see him back here again. I guarantee that.
Yeah, but we're laughing about it, or I'm laughing about it at the moment, and it's really a serious topic. I wonder whether or not there are artists that are in Jean Baptiste's kind of price range, if you will, for you to have. That literally, if they cannot, if they're worried about not only their own income being limited, but if John were to be playing four or five venues on the West Coast, there may be a chance that three of those venues may be closed down even after COVID. And so whether or not they can proceed to continue or not. And I think the same may apply to some of the things that Todd books for Good Medicine. You know, an artist that Todd may have coming to play at the Siren or at one of the wineries may be looking at the fact of, gee, we'd love to come to play next summer in San Luis Obispo County, but three of the gigs that we were going to have to wrap around you are for venues that don't exist anymore.
I can speak to that as some examples. I mean, I think that happens at every level. I think, again, kind of at the smaller level, larger artists, and not to be presumptuous because I'm not intimate with the Performing Arts Center, but an artist that's going to perform at the Performing Arts Center is, I think, typically going to have more resource. They may require more resource to pull off a show, but they're going to have a bit more, you know, kind of backing them and moving forward. On a smaller level, and it could be somewhere from a what we talked about, maybe 150 attendee show to even 1,000 people coming to a show. Oftentimes, we benefit being San Luis Obispo from what they call, you know, their tour routing. One thing that we noticed as these artists were rescheduling their shows as things started to transpire in March was that they were moving into later dates, whether it be June, then it comes to be August, now it's October. But they were revolving their routing around an anchor date. So they were revolving their routing around a festival that's happening or something that's basically paying the majority of the overhead that they have to get out to the West Coast if they're traveling from somewhere far away. And as those bigger events start to fall through the cracks, then they don't have the anchor date that supports the finances that they need to tour at long distances. I think that we're going to see some of those festivals that may have been startup festivals. They may be dealing with a different set of circumstances, which should come down to a municipality's approach to how they're going to handle, the COVID at a geographic level. And when those things start to fall, then, you know, the cards start to kind of fall in place after that.
Yeah. Let's leave it at there for the moment. We're going to take a brief hiatus here from the program. Let's catch our breath and we'll be back with you in a little bit. This is Central Coast Voices. We're talking today about what the arts have done to what COVID has done to the arts in our community. And it's certainly no laughing matter. And we'll turn it back over to the studio. We'll be back with you in a moment or two.
Voices on KCBX. If you have questions you want to have answered, you can send them to us at voices@kcbx.org or call them into us at 805-549-8855. We're back with Central Coast Voices at KCBX. And we just got a question that came in from a listener is asking why Slo County is preventing live music from happening, even with social distancing and masks. He adds that Governor Newsom's orders do not specifically say that live music cannot happen. What do you have to say about that, Fred?
Well, I'm going to allow my guest to say something about it because I don't have a good answer. Steve, I'll start with you. Has that been posed by the PAC people and Cal Poly, and are you getting a lot of feedback from attendees about it?
Well, essentially, the PAC can't have any gathering larger than 10 people at this point. So that pretty much shuts things down. And I think that they were also looking at the possibilities of recording some larger concerts, you know, orchestras, choirs, et cetera. For the time being, that is not allowed. I think the university may be interpreting, or, you know, I think it's the county is not allowing that to happen. So, you know, we're kind of at a standstill regarding those kinds of events.
Yeah, I want to jump in for a second and say that I think that that sometimes during this time of sheltering in place and not getting out and doing things, that people forget that we still have a board of supervisors that meets regularly, and their meetings are televised, and they're required to be open to the public for comment. Some of these type of things may need to be really discussed and challenged at the county level, because there are possibilities. I know some of the places, and I'll let Todd speak for himself, but my experience is a number of the places that Todd has put on music for Good Medicine at breweries and places like that have plenty of room for people to spread out. I'm wondering if the concern he's hearing is that people are afraid that people won't follow the rules.
Now that's a great question. You know, I think it's hard to interpret what's happening at the state level versus what's happening at a local municipal level. And there is variances. I don't believe, as Steve had mentioned, I think within the counties that Governor Newsom has identified as, or is listed as more active, that you can't have gatherings of more than 10 people. And I've even heard as little as 4. I think that the thing that's unique about music and the way that they're interpreting that at the county level, which is my understanding on July 13th, that the county did issue a new requirement or new mandate that said that no live entertainment was being allowed in San Luis County at this time. And I think that I looked that up earlier to emergencyslo.org is where I was told that that information was listed. Glenn Starkey had an article in the New Times recently about it. And I did notice a lot of musicians reaching out to us and also having a lot of social media chatter about, you know, what to do. I did have one musician that is a closer contact with us and our family, and he was moving towards a concert at a winery on a Saturday. He reached out on a Thursday and asked what he should do. And he was concerned about, one, if it was the right thing to do, if it was allowed to do, but it was, you know, he wants to be sensitive. He was confused as to what the best thing to do while he was very sensitive to, you know, earning for his family. So I do think it is complex, but I think that the county of San Luis Obispo at this particular time has said that you cannot do it, because putting on an event that it at any level encourages people to congregate is not something that they're going to allow at this time. Fred, you had mentioned I think that there is a an ongoing debate as to whether or not that's reasonable. I think people have varying opinions about how to approach the virus and managing the virus, and you look at a brewery or a winery or some other commercial venue that has space, it has an open area where you can stay 6 feet away, where you can wear masks, where people can hopefully behave in the proper manner. But again, my understanding is right now in San Luis County, they are not allowing that. And I've also heard through firsthand experiences I have a hard time remembering the chronology of how everything has transpired, but when things were eased up and you went from having, I guess, maybe phase two, where you can have restaurants open and they can take reservations. And we did talk to a number of our venues, and they were moving into where you have to sell tickets. You have to sell tickets to a winery to sit at a table. They were entertaining having music go along with that. They had to even sign a form that said, I don't have a fever. They can check your temperature at the door. And they went through this process to try to do what they were supposed to do to allow events to happen. And then I'm not going to say the rug was pulled out from under them, but then it changed again. And so I think it's this constant evolution of trying to figure out what to do. And so again, people feel like they're following the social distancing guidelines. They're wearing their masks. They have their own reserve tables, but it got taken away from them. And I think that that's led to a lot of frustration from people just trying to navigate what is allowed and what isn't allowed. But again, I think in San Luis County right now, they're saying that music is causing people to congregate, or live events are causing people to congregate or motivating people to congregate, and they're simply not going to allow it to happen. And I'm sorry, I should finish by saying that several musicians and venues have been contacted by the county and saying that you cannot do it. And one point I was going to mention before, when things were easing up, there were venues and there were artists that that were pushing the limit. You know, I think as this whole thing has evolved, people have had varying opinions or motivated from certain directions. We've got to get out. We've got to get the economy back going. We've got to do these things. Other people feel, no, we need to give it more time. And we kind of blew it the first time around. But the county perhaps was unrefined or not really. I mean, they were putting out guidelines, but maybe not acting on them. It's my understanding this time around, they are acting on them and they are getting involved and letting you know that you can't do it.
Yeah, I think we forget sometimes that this is not something that's gone on. There's no playbook for how to get through a pandemic in current society. And I think that I've got to say, I think we're overestimating the skill set, I think, for some of the people, not because they aren't skilled, but because this is new territory. Steve, I think you're getting still agitated by people saying, why can't we do things in a different way? You came up, you had some very clear answers before. Are you looking at some possibilities to be able to do some things maybe outside on the plaza in front of the Performing Arts Center? Possibly, even if they're small, yeah, to keep people connected.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's possible. We're also looking at doing some live streaming events. One thing moving forward, trying to, a little crystal balling, which is very dangerous to do in this sort of environment. But, large gatherings are in, for those of you who have been following it, are in phase four of this process. And we've kind of backed off to the beginning of phase two right now. But once we get to a place where events would even be allowed in large venues like the Fremont or the Performing Arts Center, or the Spanish or whatever, with, multiple hundreds of people, there is the concern that the stipulation will be that it will have to be in sort of, socially distanced sort of, in that kind of environment. And, frankly, that's going to mean that we can't. So just to give you a sense of it, when the Performing Arts Center staff did a chart of the seat map and socially distanced everything, and it took the 1,280 seats down at the PAC down to just over 300 or just under 300. So from a financial standpoint, when you're paying, certainly not a Broadway show is going to do it for can do a show with 300 people. And most of the artists we have, the artist fees are just too substantial to be able to make that an appropriate deal proposition. So we'd probably have to keep canceling until we get to a place where we are allowed to have full audiences. So that would mean we'd have to move to another platform, which would be probably streaming. We are planning a speaker series, kind of start with an easier format, a speaker series in the fall. That we're going to get some, big time speakers. Some of them may be musicians and artists who talk and sing and, whatever. But we'll be announcing that, I think, over the next month or so. And then we're looking at other ways to, get out there. And like you said, something out in the plaza, maybe, that it, once we're allowed to gather, at least at a socially distanced sort of way, you know, trying to do what we can.
Neil, I've on this regard for you folks, maybe there are some things that the visual arts, visual arts that you do, not performing arts, can consider working with the county on. So, I mean, if there's a gallery, you know, there's a number of galleries. There's a couple in Paso Robles, a couple in San Luis Obispo, where multiple artists are sharing some rather open space. Whether or not the ability to maybe have an artist that is only seeing visitors by appointment, or only visit no more than two or three visitors at a time, I'm wondering if there's a better opportunity for those type of art presentations to be a starting point, because as both Todd and Steve talked about, people want to congregate if you allow too many people together, even if you really ask them to stay apart. Is that a discussion that's going on with your folks?
Yeah, it was definitely a discussion that we had when we were talking about doing Art After Dark or Open Studios this year. I think I know that the museum was trying something like a little bit of a pilot thing where they were having people like eight at a time come into the museum, and they were going to just have those eight people like kind of congregate, look at the show, and then those people move out, and then another eight people move in. I think with the new restrictions, I think that they kind of put the kibosh on that. I see when I look, I don't just look, I don't just look like locally. When I look at things that we can try to do, I kind of look to our other maybe sister cities, maybe a Santa Barbara or Santa Cruz or something like that, to see what's going on there, to see what maybe they're doing. And even beyond that, past that, to Los Angeles and San Francisco. And really, it honestly looks like streaming online, having a virtual show, even at a gallery that kind of like does a walkthrough in a way where they kind of taking their cell phone and they're taking a video of the gallery as it stands, has been something that has been kind of like a patchwork band-aid sort of thing for the galleries and stuff like that. I know that there's a gallery called Left Field in Los Osos, and he's kind of doing sort of the same thing in some ways. He tried, or maybe he's still continuing to try, small groups of people at a time to walk through, and then they kind of come out and they're in an open space. But in the end, I think the only way that we're going to do this going forward is just try to do it online, figuring out ways to do it online. I think the galleries are in peril. I think that museums will probably hopefully survive with the support of their donors and things like that. But I think if you're a guy that owns a gallery, I think that you're hoping that people will support you online as much as they did support you in person.
I think we probably don't know what the new normal is yet. And we are not going to, it may take us I'm thinking 4 to 5 years to get a sense of what normal is after we get out of this. Todd, are you finding that there are venues that you're still keeping in touch with that you worry about? You don't need to name names, but you worry about whether or not a year from now they'll still be in business in a way that will allow you to continue to produce the concerts that you do.
I think that's definitely a significant concern. I think it's still very early to see exactly how things are going to play out, but certainly if you read some of the I guess people prognosticating on where it's all going, I think that Neil said, everything is in peril. I mean, I think that we live in an area where certain venues or businesses are well funded, and so they're in a position to kind of weather the storm. I think that the payment protection program certainly applies in certain respects in helping people continue on. I think that, as we've already mentioned before, the challenge with what we do is that it's, as Steve had said, it's stage four. I mean, stage four kind of, I mean, they liken it to a vaccine or kind of the end of the pandemic. And I just don't know what that reality looks like.
I think the only encouragement we've had is that some of the medical breakthroughs that we've heard about just in the last couple of weeks may put things ahead of our worst fears, but we're still probably in tough shape. Todd, I don't want to mention any particular venue because I think that may not be fair to the venue. But I've been to a number of concerts that you've done in venues that I would classify as pretty snug space. I'm wondering whether or not those venues are having discussions among themselves or with you, not about the fact of whether or not when we've cleared this pandemic out of our lives for a while, whether or not there is going to be an ongoing fear for to some extent. I mean, I've been to a couple of your concerts that there's a couple hundred people squeezed in the space legally. That see, I'm wondering, gee, how do we turn around and get another drink? But I'm wondering whether or not the audience is going to worry so much about that, that those venues are worried about whether or not they'll be able to even open again.
I think it's a great question. I think high density occupancy for San Luis Obispo County is one person per every 5 square feet. So as you said, you can snug people in and tight together, and that doesn't reflect social distancing. So I do think that will be a consideration. I think that the county and the state will allow outdoor events to happen before they allow indoor events. I think that there may be new requirements on filtration systems for air that is in those facilities. And then I think that you're going to see a lot of the decisions of the general public made, on a demographic level, related to their age. I think kids, as we've seen throughout the United States, if you you want to put on a concert that targets younger people, I think they're probably going to be very inclined to get out of the house and be thankful that things are open. I think if you look at a concert that slants towards an older demographic, I think you're going to see a lot more caution.
Yeah. We're getting towards the end of the program, and as our regular listeners know, I do my best because I talk too much in this program to get out of the way and let my my guests have the last few minutes with their parting shots. Steve, I'll start with you, and then we'll go around the table. But what do you want to make sure people don't forget?
Well, a couple things. First, playing off of what Todd was talking about there a little bit, we're not sure what you were talking about, Fred. We're not sure what people's reactions are going to be, and I don't know. I would hope that many of you have received a survey in the mail from the SLOW Arts Leadership Roundtable. That's about 20 groups that came together and have put out a survey asking people what their concerns are and what can happen in venues to make them feel safer. And we've sent one of those out, got results back. We sent another one out a couple of weeks ago, and we're just about to have the results from the second one. We will continue to send that because I think that's going to be an evolving state of mind as the year goes on. And, we need to know what people are willing. And frankly, some people are not going to come back until there's a vaccine. And, those people, I certainly respect that. For those who are willing to come back, we want to see what it's going to take for them to feel safe and comfortable. So that's when that comes out again, if you haven't done it already, please fill it out. And the more input we get from people, the better. I hate to use that word that gets thrown around a lot, but we're pivoting just like so many organizations in town, across the state, country, world, whatever. We have to stay vital and in people's lives because, as Neil said, without art, where are we? So, we look forward to keeping in touch with everybody, and we're hoping to announce our season sometime around the beginning of September, middle of September, our season. So stay tuned for that as well.
Neil, a few thoughts as we close out the hour.
Yeah, I think it would be nice if everybody was more cognizant about the needs of the artists, possibly. I know it's not an easy time, and that's probably a selfish thing to say, but if you're able to donate, you're in a financial position to donate to your favorite band, to your favorite restaurant, to your favorite artist, or even to your favorite nonprofit, which might be SoCounty Arts, I hope. Please do so. It's a shameless plug, but I just want you guys, I just want anybody within earshot to definitely don't forget about us.
And the arts sometimes are made up with shameless plugs and they're important.
It's true.
Yeah.
Just one endless chain of shameless plugs until we die.
Okay. Thank you. Todd.
You know, I don't think I can say anything that would be more meaningful than reiterate what Neil just said. Artists and the community are definitely in need right now. Things have even fired from where the stream seemed to kind of jump out early on with artists. And I think a lot of artists felt like they kind of did their foyer into streaming and kind of figured it out. And then they had to move on. So whatever you can do to stay connected with your community and the artists in your community and support them in any way you can is what they need right now.
Okay. Todd, we hope you're all around for a long time to continue this. Steve, you had another thought. Go ahead.
Just one more thing. The next round of federal support is being debated right now, and it contains a considerable amount for individual artists and lots of nonprofits. So if you have the ability to contact a congressperson or just find a way to help lobby for that, that would be greatly appreciated. It will mean a lot to a lot of smaller arts entities and individual artists.
Great. Good point, Steve, and good parting shot over the bow for everyone. Thank you. This has been Central Coast Voices. I thank you all for joining us today. This has been a good program. I want to remind you that we're going to attempt to set up a program in the near future that will focus more on actual artists and musicians and their experiences. It's a broad topic and it needs a lot of discussion. Chris Kington Barker will be back next week, as we do. She and I rotate every week or two. Her program is still under planning right now, so we're not quite sure what the topic is for that program, but be sure to listen to Chris's program then. As I've told you many times before, Central Coast Voices is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, a project of the Community Foundation, and we appreciate the support of the Community Foundation and KCBX Public Radio, and we also appreciate the support of Joan Gellert Sargent, who's been underwriting the program for quite some time. If you have some information you'd like to share with the program or suggestions for topics or concerned about today's program, you can reach us at voices@kcbx.org. We're doing our best to make sure that we hear you and you hear us during these times, even though we're doing a lot of this programming from home. And thanks to my guests today, Neil Breton, Todd Newman, and Steve Larian, for putting on what I would have to say is a good program and a good discussion about the arts. We hope we're all back together to celebrate the arts in the very near future. This has been Central Coast Voices. Please stay tuned for This American Life, my favorite radio show.
Thanks, Fred.
For tuning in for Central Coast Voices on KCBX.